Hey, it's Ralph here. Q1 is now closing and it probably didn't go as well as you had hoped, but I'm sure your agency is probably telling you that they crushed it. But in reality, it crushed you. If your agency isn't on the same page as you are, if there's something wrong, but you can't quite put your finger on what that thing is, go on over to tier11.com/apply and we'll set you up on a call to show you a better way to look at your business. Not just metrics that make us agencies look good, but something that actually moves the needle and makes you more money, acquires more new customers, and ultimately achieves your vision. Head on over to tier11.com/apply today.
You're listening to Perpetual Traffic.
Well, there is no question that when it comes to influence and persuasion in digital marketing, no one, and I mean no one, commands more respect than Dr. Robert Cialdini. If you have never read his books, Influence and Persuasion, I swear you are missing so much in your digital marketing, not only as an influencer and an advertiser, but as just a great marketer. And that's why I'm so excited to invite you to a free webinar where he'll be sharing his latest insights on new e-commerce strategies. Now, alongside Dr. Cialdini, you'll learn from Bass Wouters and the authors of Reputation King, my buddies Scott Brandley and DJ Sprague. Attendees will absolutely be able to understand exactly how to gain a competitive edge in the marketplace by leveraging online reputation management. Now, that's something that we haven't talked about here on this show all that much. And it's more reason for you to register for the webinar here, which is completely free over at reputationking.com/PT. So join us on April 18th from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific for you West Coasters by registering at reputationking.com/PT. Once again, that's reputationking.com/PT. Cialdini has been a huge influence on me, and I can't wait to see how his new e-commerce strategies resonate with you and how they affect your business in a positive way using reputation management. Make sure that you register for the April 18th free webinar at reputationking.com/PT.
You're listening to Perpetual Traffic. This is a show where we talk about business, marketing, and KB toys. I'm Kostom Austin, the co-founder of Driven Mastermind. We're so glad that you joined us today. And we'd love for you to come hang out in our new Telegram group, perpetualtraffic.com/Telegram. We already have a thriving community going. The group is awesome. People are chopping us up. It's a great way to contribute. Tell us what you want to talk about. Ask questions, argue with me. So if I say anything you disagree with, you can come yell at me. PerpetualTraffic.com/Telegram. Now, let's get to our show. And a guest that I've been excited about since we booked him. You've read his books. You've seen his name. You've been exposed to his work, even if you don't know it, because this dude's been around for a while and works with some of the biggest names in marketing. His name's John Jantz. He's a marketing consultant, speaker, Wall Street Journal bestselling author of Duct Tape Marketing, The Referral Engine, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, and The Ultimate Marketing Engine. He's also the founder of Duct Tape Marketing Consultant Network, which trains and licenses independent consultants and agencies to use the duct tape methodology. His keynotes and training motivate and engage audiences worldwide at industry and trade events. I wish I had someone who could write a bio this good. John, thanks for being here.
Yep, that's probably version number 700 or so. You know, I've been doing this for so darn long that you keep working on those things.
Yeah, well, when you've done as much as you've done, it's hard to pack it all into like a soundbite, but I think y'all did a pretty good job.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm sure you get them too. I get bios sent to me from people and they're like 3 pages. And I'm like, let's tighten that up a little.
Oh, yeah. I emceed TNC one year and the speaker bios that people would want me to read, I'm like, dude, I'm not reading that. You can pick 2 bullet points that I'm going to get up there and say, but I'm not going to do your little diatribe here. You've got a ton of books published. If somebody needed the quick and dirty John Jantz, what's the one that you would point an audience to go introduce themselves to you?
Well, Duct Tape Marketing was really kind of it's certainly the book I'm most known for, but it was really a telling of the work I'd been doing for about a decade in a very systematic approach to marketing. And I think, you know, at the time it introduced some what were revolutionary concepts. They're not necessarily revolutionary, but they were for small business.
That's awesome. So if you're listening to this and you want to get to know John, go check that book out. It's a good read. I'm a fan. We're going to talk today about a topic that, to be honest with you, terrifies and repels me because it feels like a leash. Like, I'm the ready, fire, aim marketer. I like to just try shit. And that's why I'm good at traffic for that reason, because traffic rewards people who fail often and fail quickly. But it's also a little less sophisticated. And as I grow up and mature a little as an entrepreneur, I start to see the need for like a plan. And there being a grown-up in the room that drives that plan forward. And John, if you don't mind my putting what you do in a box, that feels a little bit like what it is that y'all do, right? In terms of the whole fractional CMO thing. It's like, why don't we add some scaffolding and make this a real role?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, first off, before I get into that, there's nothing wrong with experimenting. Experimenting is a huge part of marketing. There's always going to be a place for that. But what we try to do is actually give some framework to the experiment. Like, who are we trying to attract? You know, how do we want them to realize that we're different? Where do they hang out? I mean, those are some of the things that strategy or a strategic look will bring you. Then, you know, experiment away to try to have success in that framework. The other thing that it really does is, a lot of marketers or a lot of business owners will go out and they'll hire a web person and a content person and an SEO person and a social person, and none of them are really connected. You know, they're all just doing their thing. So another thing that a fractional CMO or marketing manager or whatever you want to call the role will do is they become the orchestrator or the conductor of the orchestration to say, we're all doing this with this message. You know, this is the brand promise. This is what we want people to believe we are. And that is extremely valuable as well, because a lot of business owners are buying tactics and the SEO person tells them they needed to do this. And they're like, okay, go do it. So it's kind of the person that's their marketing advocate inside the organization.
That makes a lot of sense. I'll preface by saying that I'm a believer. One of my best friends in the whole wide world is a fractional CMO. Her name's Christine Marie. Shout out to her. She has crossed me over to the light side, let's say. However, what I'd like to do for the sake of our listeners is take the contrarian view briefly, and then I'll let you beat me up, but I'm going to try to fight back, because here's how I feel sometimes about the fractional anything. Especially when you're a smaller business. And I don't even mean small business. I'm thinking like sub 5 million in revenue. Fractional C-suite feels like bloat. Because I'm like, all right, I know I need all the things, right? I need traffic and I need creative and I need governance. And I need targeting. I need SEO and I need. And then I'm going to go take a whole bunch of money and hand it to somebody to tell me that I know I need these things. It just feels a little bit like I'm paying someone to tell me to pay someone.
Here's what we've discovered over the years is that even at I've found $10 million businesses that had no structure to marketing at all. The founder was just pretty good at selling, pretty good at, you know, producing, you know, clients, right? But they got to a certain point where they realized we can't grow anymore. And they were just throwing like the tactic of the week. But they didn't really understand marketing. You mentioned, I know I need this. They may know that sort of at a high level, but actually, how do I even buy it? They're terrible at it. I hate to pick on SEO people, but it's so easy sometimes. I mean, we've come across SEO folks that are charging clients $5,000 a month and doing essentially nothing but smoke and mirrors. And so a lot of what we have been able to do is actually save people money. AdWords is another great area where people just get, you know, reamed by not understanding how to buy it, even to have a professional do it. And so a lot of what we're actually able to do is come in and say, look, you don't understand marketing fully. We do. We're actually going to save you money, cut out some things that you're doing, and point you in the right direction and make you much more efficient.
So good answer, obviously, from a 50,000 foot view. But then the question becomes, how do I know the CMO knows? You know what I mean? Like, what are the things, if you were to give me the checklist, if I'm a higher fractional CMO, they must A, B, C, and D.
Well, the first one, believe it or not, is they need to be all over your metrics, which, you know, most small businesses are not. But the first thing we actually do is come in and set up, who are we trying to attract? What does a conversion rate look like? You know, what's our cost to acquire a customer need to look like if we're going to have certain growth and revenue? And God help them, most business owners can't even tell you, you know, most of that information. So that's the first thing that we're going to come in and set up. And I hate to say it, a lot of the vendor type of roles that they hire, you know, it's like, yeah, we got you more traffic. traffic. Okay, more hits. Remember when people used to say that? Like, you know, what does that mean for me? We're really trying to figure out how is what we're doing adding to the bottom line objectives. So that's job number one. Job number two for us is we're going to actually narrow their target market focus. Most businesses, as cliche as it is, 80-20 principle, you know, exists for a reason. Most businesses, you know, 20% of their customer base is their most profitable. That's who they actually ought to be focusing their energy in on attracting more of, growing with. So we do a lot of narrowing. And then I have yet to come across an organization that has a message that clearly differentiates them from everybody else who says that they're doing what they're doing. We're going to work on really understanding how to communicate the value that their clients, their best clients, are actually receiving. And it's not the product, you know, it's usually the experience. So, you know, those first couple things, quite frankly, can really help then inform what they should be doing from a tactic standpoint. But here's the other key, what they shouldn't be doing. We have many business owners that that's actually the best gift that we can bring them is to say, oh no, I don't have to worry about TikTok. Awesome. I was sweating that one, but now I realize I don't have to be on that. So again, that's a lot of what we do. And we become a trusted advisor inside the entire business, you know, as opposed to somebody that is focused on selling one thing.
I'm going to repeat what I heard here. Number one, metrics. Fractional CMO is going to be data driven and look at numbers first. I love that answer, by the way. I'm so glad you started there. And if you're listening to this, you're God in heaven. And I think, again, that's probably a fractional anything. Fractional CMO, COO, CFO. If they don't want to see your numbers first, if they don't want the KPIs, if they don't want to know how we win, where we win, how we're measuring winning, then they're too touchy-feely for my tastes, is what I'll say softly.
Yep,
so I love that we're starting with metrics. And then number two, I like you said, narrow target market focus, which I hear is niche down. Most businesses don't niche enough. It's like, oh, who do you help? Oh, I help entrepreneurs. Okay, well, God bless you, because that's, you know, thank you for fishing in the ocean.
But it's a huge market. It's a huge market, right?
Right. Yeah. I hate that whole, the total addressable market discussion. I've been talking to a lot of private equity firms recently. I made an exit, and now the conversations that I'm having post-exit are all with these idiots. And it's these Goldman Sachs kids that they've got the education, but they've never actually been out on the field of battle. Somebody taught them to sharpen a sword, but not to use it. It's funny because so much of their approach is just diametrically opposed to what I know works. And the narrow target market focus is one of those things where everybody wants a great big addressable market until you have one and you realize like, oh, I can't talk to you at all. There's no applied specificity. There's no way for us. I can't even do onboarding with you. I can't have a sales discussion. So, and what's really fun about that, John, is it's a perfect segue to bullet point number three, which is messaging. So it's metrics first, narrow the target market focus, and then make sure you get your messaging down. And again, if you're listening to this, I mean, holy shit, did John just give you a hell of a punch list there? Like, even if you're not going to hire a fractional CMO, maybe just take a leadership weekend away and talk about, hey, how well are we checking these three boxes? And then the fourth bonus one you gave us is, it's not just about what you should be doing, it's about what you shouldn't be doing, which I really like that approach too. My business partner is a consultant. There's a gentleman whose name I won't drop, but he's a billionaire with a B. All he does is buy and sell businesses, and he does it for fun. And they brought one of the businesses that he'd recently acquired and said, hey, we want to flip this. What do we have to do to juice the revenue? And John Moran, my business partner, who's the smartest Google Ads guy in the world, quite literally, he went and did a deep dive and he goes, oh, just turn Google Ads off. And they're like, what do you mean turn Google Ads off? You know, spending a couple $100,000 a month in Google Ads. And John goes, it's all brand. All the income Google is generating is brand. Just turn it off and you'll save $300,000-$400,000 right then and there. And they fought him, turn it off, and zero impact to the bottom line, zero impact to the MRR and the ROI. But you needed a guy that actually knows Google Ads who could see, even though the attribution doesn't say it, that it's all brand attributed. And I think a good CMO should probably be able to see things like that as well.
Absolutely. A lot of the folks we work with, they're not even tracking any of that. I mean, they really can't even tell you where their conversions are coming from. So just even having that answer really can dictate just what you said. You turn a lot of things off once you realize where your highest return is coming from.
Yeah. What are the biggest mistakes you see people making, John, if somebody brings in a fractional CMO or a director of marketing? I mean, those are all basically the same things, right? Is there a semantic nuance here? Is the nomenclature important?
Yeah. I think semantics is a big part of it, frankly. I mean, half the people we work with, they don't really need a fractional CMO. They need somebody who is directing their marketing, you know, that's at least can give them, like we talked about, narrow their market focus, set up some metrics. You know, they don't need somebody coming into a weekly meeting saying I'm the CMO necessarily, but they just need somebody giving them direction and holding them accountable. So that's a lot of what we do between you and me. I mean, whatever you want to call it, we've leaned into the positioning just because it's a trending terminology that a lot of smaller businesses are starting to realize they need some of, but it is just semantics, quite frankly. You started asking me about mistakes. So we've hit on a lot of the mistakes, but the number one that I see is there's a heck of a lot of people that hang a shingle out as a fractional CMO. Maybe they've done CMO work, maybe they haven't, but hey, you know, I can call myself, you know, whatever I want to call myself. And so they feel like the role is to just come in and hang out and see what you need and be almost like an employee. Our approach is much more scoped. If you're working with somebody who's a fractional CMO and they don't have a methodology, they don't have a framework, they don't have something that they can really get to very quickly, they're just going to hang out and like kind of see what you need. That's the biggest mistake. So when you hire a CMO, a fractional CMO, a fractional marketing manager, whatever you want to call them, I would ask them what their framework is, what their approach is, what they're going to look at first, so that you're not just wasting a bunch of time with sticky notes, you know, on a whiteboard.
Yeah, I like that. Well, sort of what's your methodology, right? Because I mean, I look at CMOs almost like theologians. You could be the best in the whole wide world, but if you and I don't worship the same way, you know, or at the same altar, and I guess to be more specific and maybe less incendiary, somebody who's really good at organic as a CMO, like that's the tool in their tool belt that they're the best at. Organic's a slow burn. Yeah. And organic requires a type of lift that an organization just might not be good at or have the resources for, and paid being the exact opposite. Paid is like quick and dirty. And so even though a CMO is good and a business is good, doesn't necessarily mean that match is going to be good. And so it's sort of about finding like who's the best match for you, which I guess the question there is how do you kiss that frog? How do you test or interview a fractional CMO, or can you? Is there like a trial project, or where do you start?
It's tough to do a trial project because just like the organic is a slow burn. I mean, to some degree, coming in and figuring out what needs to be done can take a little time. We actually have a methodology. We call it strategy first. We actually have a 30 to 45 day engagement that people can hire us to do. In fact, that's what they hire us to do. We won't pass go unless, you know, unless we start there. And at the end of that, they will have kind of a plan for the next year, what we think are the priorities. They can either hire us to do those, or we'll manage their team that they might have internally to do those. So we believe that that trial period goes both ways, because we want to make sure that if we're working with somebody that we can move the needle on, because if they won't participate, they won't do what we need them to do. We don't want to waste our time either. We've fired clients early on in engagements because it's just, we know how to get value for somebody. And if they won't let us, you know, it's too frustrating for my team.
No, that makes sense. And does a CMO, if I'm hiring a fractional CMO, do they have to have a team? In your experience, is it a red flag if somebody comes in solo and is just going to be the quarterback? Or what is it people should be shopping for if they're shopping around?
I think they should have a resource network at the very least, because every engagement might be different. I need to bring in this expert for this, this expert for this. I do think you want them to have trusted resources that they can plug in when the need arises, but I don't think it's mandatory that they have a team necessarily. In fact, there are a lot of fractional CMOs that are solopreneurs, so to speak, that their model is we'll come in, you've hired a social person and you've hired somebody to write content. You know, we'll come in and actually manage your team, and if need be, plug holes or gaps where you have. They don't have to have employees necessarily. We've gone that route because a lot of the people we work with, then they're like, this plan's awesome. Who's going to do it? And so then we move into implementation. So we can actually call ours fractional CMO plus, and the plus being plus implementation.
And here's the question that you hate to be asked, but everybody's wondering, what does it cost? What are we budgeting for? I imagine it spans the spectrum and it depends, et cetera, et cetera. But like, what's the ish on a napkin?
Yeah. Yeah. So we do it actually by revenue, because larger revenue needs, larger team, you know, all of those things require, if nothing else, more meetings. So there is a higher cost. But somebody should expect to spend $5,000 to $10,000 a month for this type of role. And obviously doesn't include advertising or anything like that. But a lot of the management of build and content work and SEO work can be baked into that on a monthly basis, because that's every client's going to have those needs. But a typical CMO, if you're going to have that person in a seat, is going to cost you about $30,000 a month, you know, all in. The fractional idea can be a more affordable way to do it for somebody who certainly has no need for that role yet.
In your experience, if somebody's hiring a fractional CMO, because what I've seen happen in the market recently is agencies just rebranding themselves as fractional CMOs. But it's still an agency, and you're still kind of on the lazy Susan in terms of whoever's available that day. Should you have a dedicated point of contact? Is it just one person that you're paying for? Is it better that you have a library of people? Like, which, philosophically speaking, where do you sit there?
You definitely want to have a lead. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, your person is your person. Does that mean that they don't bring team members in for certain aspects of the work? You know, it's certainly, you're not hiring somebody's big fat brain and that's all you're buying. You're hiring somebody who's really good at orchestrating. And sometimes that means having aspects of the work that your team has done 100 times. One of the things we do with every client is we interview their clients, their best clients. That's just part of the initial process. Well, we have team members that have done that now hundreds and hundreds of times. They're very, very good at it. So that's actually just putting my hat on as the agency owner or as the fractional CMO business, that's really the only way to scale a fractional CMO model, is to have team that you can actually do aspects of the work. There are definitely a lot of people that jumped into the fractional space that basically sold a fourth of their time to 4 companies, and they might get paid nicely for their time, but tough to scale that model. What we're trying to bring to the world is we think there's a way to scale the model if you're working from a repeatable methodology.
John, you mentioned 4 companies. How many companies can one fractional CMO take? Like, if I'm hiring a fractional CMO, where's the threshold before I'm like, hey, dude, I think you're too busy for me?
Yeah, it's more like 10, frankly. And part of it's the whole setting the expectations. I mean, we set the expectations up front. Here is what you are going to get. And I think that has a lot to do, you know, if somebody just thinks I'm going to buy 25% of your time and you're going to sit in every stupid weekly meeting that we have that, you know, nothing gets done in, it's tough to manage very many clients. But if you actually have, you're able to communicate, here's the process, you can set the right expectation, or they don't hire you. So you set the right expectation that you're going to have team involved. What we have found is that our clients initially are attracted to maybe, yeah, you're going to be my lead consultant person or my fractional CMO, but they get very attracted to the idea that, oh, and by the way, these 2 other people are going to be doing work for you as well. And so they feel like they're actually getting more instead of getting less.
You know what? So just noodling, and maybe you've thought of this, maybe you haven't, but what would be kind of cool is if there was a fractional CMO group that partnered with a fractional COO group. Do you know Cameron Harold, Viv Envision?
Sure.
So like you and Cameron, you know what I mean? Like, you guys become best friends, yeah. And then like he choppers you in when they need marketing, and you chopper him in when they need ops. And the reason I'm saying this is because I have to imagine when you jump in there as a fractional CMO, you start unveiling all these horrible operations problems that they're going to have, right? It's like, oh, hey, you need to do this and do that and do this. And then they're going to say, well, we can't because, and that's an ops problem or a finance problem or whatever problem. So where is the line drawn? And then when do you start referring out or recommending other people outside of the purview of just marketing?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, marketing touches everything. So like, let's say we generate a whole bunch of leads for them, but then the customers are running out the back door, then we don't solve many problems. We necessarily have to actually get into what's the customer experience look like? What happens when somebody says yes and they want to become, you know, what's onboarding look like? Those aren't necessarily marketing things, but they certainly impact marketing. So we actually get into more operations probably than we want to, but we get into them, you know, necessarily. But there's no question that partnering, as you said, with somebody like Cameron, partnering with fractional CFOs, obviously those are approaches that would make a ton of sense.
What am I not asking you that I should be asking you, John? Like, what does a smarter person ask you about this topic?
Well, I've discovered in our short time together, you're a pretty smart person. You've been around the block a little bit. So what I love is that you're not just like handing me layups. You're pushing back a little bit. So this has been an awesome conversation. People ask that all the time. What should I be asking? And it's like, we've had a good conversation. I've kind of laid it on the line how I feel about it. You know, I don't think there's anything that you've left out.
Okay. So from my perspective, which is I'm a paid traffic agency, we're bleeding. We're actually having to reinvent ourselves right now, which is frustrating. Yeah. And I think for such a long time, people really did want, it's like going to Home Depot and getting a tool. I was the best drill on the shelf. And so it was an easy buy.
Yeah.
And I could charge whatever I wanted because I was the best drill on the shelf. And now all of a sudden people don't want, not only do they not want tools, they don't even want to walk into Home Depot. Now they just want a handyman. And the handyman probably needs to be a contractor. You know what I mean? Like you can't even just do it. So what you're saying in a lot of ways is sobering because it just reminds me of the truth of the direction of the market, which is we're growing up a little. Digital marketing was such an experiment. It's changed. It's a lot less like R&D and a lot more like finance now, to where there actually really are right ways to do things. And the tact that you're taking, I think, makes a lot of sense. If people want to talk to you, find you, hire you, learn more, where do they go? How do they do that?
Yeah, you bet. Everything I've been doing the last couple decades, you can find at ducttapemarketing.com. And that's DUCTTAPE marketing.com.
Yeah. And duct is a hard word, John, because I see a T in there. And I don't, am I trying to hit it? What's the correct pronunciation? Is it duct tape or are we just hitting, like glazing over it? How enunciating are you getting?
I think probably not enough. In fact, a lot of people spell it CK, you know, like the quack, quack.
Right.
And there actually is a brand of the actual tape that is duct brand. But the duct is, I probably gloss over it as well.
That's fine. And do you own duct tape marketing, DUCKmarketing.com, just to cover it, just in case people Google the wrong thing?
Yes, of course.
Covered your bases. Yeah. All right. John, this has been a pleasure. If you're listening to this and you're interested in fractional CMOs or fractional CMO stuff, head over to ducttapemarketing.com. Appreciate you listening to Perpetual Traffic, as you already know. We wouldn't be a podcast without listeners. If you want to hang out with me, talk to me and Ralph, ask us questions, yell at us, you can go to perpetualtraffic.com/telegram. Leaving a rating lets the algorithm know that I'm not a dummy and that maybe other people should be listening to this too. So if you want to support the show, that's probably the best thing you can do. All of the links we've talked about today are going to be in the show notes. You can go to the website, perpetualtraffic.com, go back, listen to previous episodes, and then make sure to tune in next time for whatever awesome guests we have lined up for you. Appreciate you, John Jantz, again so much. And to my PT listeners, peace.
You've been listening to Perpetual Traffic,